We're back here on In Focus, News Radio KMAN. On a Tuesday morning, we're chatting with our guests from Pottawatomie County, Commissioner Greg Riott and County Planner Stephen Metzger. And we go back to the phone lines now. We have our first caller on the show. Robert is standing by with a question or a comment. Go ahead, Robert.
Thank you for looking at all the elements involved with these solar farms. My guys got involved in the solar down in St. Augustine because they already had the houses there. And they put up the warehouse for their Bitcoin operation and then put solar on top of it. Well, there's no income tax, you know, in Florida. So they were looking for more room, although they're taking over a lot of the big parking lot and building more buildings for more mining efforts. But they moved out also to Texas where they could get the land cheap. No income tax there. And they're putting up the buildings for the Bitcoin mining and putting in the solar farm. But now they don't have the batteries. So at night, they had to put multiple 200 amp services on the warehouses to service the equipment. And, you know, you also have other things that you need to look at. With something like that, you need security because Bitcoins don't fall out on the floor. It's a whole different kind of operation. And, you know, intruders into your 100 acres, 1,000 acre Bitcoin farms is an is something you need to worry about, where you fence them or what requirements you have for it. And then the other thing, just like Jeffrey's Energy Center, it wants to be a wildlife management area. You know, the folks, although we had the cattle out there, we weren't plowing up the fields, so we had pheasants and quail everywhere. And with that, you'll also get coyotes, which become a management problem. So, I mean, you've got a whole world of things to look at besides just your solar. And you need to tell them about the taxes, make sure it's a difference between the land and the equipment so they understand what kind of a tax obligation they're giving up so that those solar farms can be brought in here. Thank you very much for all your efforts, and I hope that bringing us into 2022, you'll also look at that bridge across the Blue River. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call, Robert. Do you guys have any follow-ups to that? You want to respond to anything he said there?
Yeah, I think you brought up some really good points. So one of the things that I wanted to make a distinction between was I think he brought up some rooftop solar obliquely, and I just want to make it, you know, make the point that if you want to do rooftop solar for your house, you can do that. That's all permitted right now by right. You don't really need a building permit either. So that's something that you can just do today if you want. But he brought up the security fencing, which is pretty standard practice in the industry. And it's something that we touch on a little bit in our regulations. And then he also talked about wildlife management. And one of the things that that has been a focus early is both making sure that we plant the solar farm area into native species as much as possible, and to encourage, one of the things that came up a couple meetings ago was actually wildlife fencing to encourage the movement in between the solar panels by native wildlife in the area. So he brought up some good points, and we're trying to address them in our draft regulations, but always open for suggestions.
And I don't know if this is a question for Greg, maybe. Do you find that the discussion over solar farms, is it less controversial than maybe wind farms? Because I know that anytime those get brought up in a lot of municipalities, that seems to always generate a lot of disagreement among the public.
Well, I haven't had any wind farm conversations, so I guess I probably can't say whether it is or isn't, but I know on the solar, you know, again, I use the word spirited. You know, the people we're working with are, I think they're really doing a good job on bringing the good and the bad, or what they perceive as, out in these conversations. And, you know, I think we're doing our best to try to figure out what's the right course to take on this. Like I said, it's just simply not a cut and dry, you know, like there's potholes on the road, let's put some gravel on it. It's not that that's always simple, but it's not like that. Again, there's so many aspects of this. And if this is done, need to get it right. I know it was brought to our attention at the meeting that they're working on one in Johnson County, and it's going to be a larger farm. And, you know, I think it'd be good to kind of watch along there and find out what they do wrong and what they do right. And, you know, sometimes it pays to be a good listener, and I think here for the next few months, that's probably what we need to do, is be a good observer and find out what's going on and listen to our public, our communities, and, you know, make good decisions for this, whichever that way is.
Well, Stephen, does with these regs being developed, will this do anything to also, you know, if they decide to have wind farms at some point in Pottawatomie County, would that address the needs for those within these guidelines?
So they wouldn't be addressed within these guidelines. The thing about wind farms in Pott County is actually there's a statewide moratorium. So you can't actually build any wind farms in Pott County because we're part of the Flint Hills region. And years ago, Governor Sebelius and then Governor Brownback reaffirmed it. They banned wind farms within that Flint Hills area. And Pott County and Riley County are two of the two northernmost counties as part of that. But yeah, I think a discussion on wind farms would likely come at the conclusion of our discussion of solar farms.
Okay. I did not realize that, but that's interesting. Well, as far as other things going on here with your office, Stephen, it's January. It's always a good time to talk building permits.
Yeah, we had a pretty busy year permit-wise. Over the last 5 years, it was pretty much right average in every category. We did about 150-odd homes total in the county, and about 85% of those homes were within the 24 corridor. Not just the 24 corridor, but between Manhattan and Wamego. That's where about 85% of our homes are built. So it's been a good year. The year before was a little bit down because of just a couple of different factors. The one thing that has really changed over the last 5 years, and I think we talked about this at County Commission when I brought this up, was the price of a home has really jumped up significantly over the last 5 years. And there are tons of reasons for that, you know, exacerbated, I'm sure, by the pandemic and the supply shortages that we've had. But there's just a lot of things going on that have not very slowly increased the price of a new home out in Pott County. So now when we do a permit, the average new permit home is in the low to mid threes, whereas just a few years ago it was in the mid twos. So we've seen a big increase, and that's been noted in our data.
I feel like every time I drive between Manhattan and Wamego, I see another development coming in. How many, do you have an idea, ballpark, of how many subdivisions there are that are either planned or just starting to develop there along the corridor?
So within that blue township area, there are preliminary platted, which means we have sort of an overview of what the subdivision is going to look like, how many lots, that kind of thing. There are about 800 possible lots in Blue Township, which is about 10 years worth of growth. And then in the, what we call the rural area between, rural development area between Manhattan and Wamego, there's maybe 50 to 80 available lots out there right now. So you're looking at a lot of potential growth within that growing area.
All right. Well, that's interesting, and I know there's a lot of things kind of in the works in between there with improvements. Elm Slough is one of them. Where's that project at in terms of? I know they're talking about getting it paved here at some point. Greg, do you know where that's at the moment?
It's still in the process. I think right now it makes a little bit more sense to go after Salsa Road. That road is partially paved the way it is. And, you know, I think everybody out there would like to see something done. And then we can, I know I talked with, the commission spoke with Nathan, our engineer, yesterday. And I think they're getting close to having the design done for Salsa Road. And, I hope that it'll be this summer. Maybe we'll see some progress on that. And then that's going to take a little bit of heat off of Elmslie Road. Elmslie will be a major project. There's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of, a couple utilities that are going to need to be moved. There's a bridger, one for sure, that's going to need to be addressed. And so Elmslie's still on the board, I believe. But I think Salzer, it's probably going to come up here pretty soon, I hope.
Okay. Well, yeah, and Salzer's another key one there for sure. And there's a lot of dirt roads in Pottawatomie County. And 10 years ago, I know the county looked a lot different. But seeing all this growth, I understand the importance of people wanting the paved roads. And it's not a cheap endeavor, is it?
No. I mean, it's to prepare the road and, right away and making sure you got good ditches and stuff like that. It's expensive to do that.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to step aside, take our second break of the program here. More from our Pottawatomie County guests in a moment. News Radio KMAN.